Welcome to Under Construction with Chadwicks. I'm Donnacha Callan, and yet again, I'm joining the great Pat Moore. Pat, how are you?
Oh God, Donnacha, another one of these. How many more have we got left?
Listen, this is what we're going to start doing every Tuesday now. We hang around together. This is our thing.
I need to get a bit taller, I think. Or you need to get a bit shorter.
What are we going to do next week?
I'll put stilts on.
Okay, you'd be well able. Pat, you're going to be massively interested in today's podcast because we're going to look at the present and the future of communications. So basically, the importance of the social media platforms in all our lives. And what we're really hoping from today is that we can get you trending, make you cool.
I'm still using Bebo, so... Okay. Comes after
hashtag Pat's cool
TikTok thing or something.
Well, to help us get through it all and to navigate it, we're delighted to be joined by Owen Reardon. Owen, how are you?
Not too bad now. How's it going?
Great. Owen, tell us a little about yourself. You have 2.7 million TikTok followers. Is this correct?
Something like that, yeah. Something there anyway.
Amazing. Tell me, how did that come about?
Well, about a year ago to the day, I started just posting videos of myself using like old-fashioned woodworking tools on TikTok. I had a private story on Snapchat and one of my friends, she said to me, oh yeah, throw that up on TikTok. And so I did. And wow. It got like 6,000 views and I was taken aback. I couldn't believe it. And people were asking questions. They'd never seen this like hand plane before. So I was making videos responding to this these questions. And it just kind of snowballed. It never really stopped. It was like in a matter of weeks then I was at 100,000 and it just kept on going.
Wow. We'll get back to that side of it. But tell us the trade. What do you do? So would you turn wood or you...
I suppose I just kind of, I do the wood, as my friends say, just kind of all things old-fashioned woodworking. So I do a lot of like fixing up of old-fashioned tools like axes and hand planes, chisels, saws. And then I make old-fashioned furniture, like furniture that it would have been, you could find in rural Ireland 200 years ago that would have all been made by hand.
Wow. Why is that so important to you, that tie-in with tradition, how we used to do things?
Well, I think we've lost a lot of it, and I think it's a shame. You know, the majority of the furniture in your house is probably imported from China or IKEA, wherever they get it from. I think it's important to appreciate, first of all, the hand tools and the methods our ancestors used to make these pieces of furniture and appreciate the tools themselves.
Owen, how did you learn your craft? How did you learn to... produce and do what you do?
I never did woodworking in school or anything like that. Wow. So when lockdown set in, I wanted to make a curragh, you know, the old Irish boats, and we didn't have any tools at home. So I just kind of, I took to YouTube, books, talking to people. I scavenged like the internet, Dundeel, car boot sales to find the old cheaper tools. I fixed them up. I used them to make the boat. And once the boat was done, you know, the addiction had set in.
Whoa, so hold on. Oh, no knowledge before then, before lockdown. Like, is there, you know, carpenters in your family? Is there...
No, I come from two accountants.
Wow, that is amazing.
The bigger question is, did the bow flow?
Now, it's got a leak, but once you have another person that can pan out the water faster than it's coming in, I can row on.
Wow. Do you feel you just have a natural tie for it? Is this an inbuilt skill that you have?
I think so. I think when I started like collecting these tools and fixing them up, I was just obsessed with them. And I think an obsession can be a very wonderful thing if you like, if you let it fester, you know, you spend hours just reading and researching. And I think it's something's ingrained in me that is obsessive. And that's where I got this.
They obviously think we're not that smart on the podcast because they've written down beside a Cork boat. So you obviously didn't know, as I did obviously. But can you tell us a bit about that, telling about the start of the project, why you wanted to build a boat for a start, and then how you went around. I know you mentioned the tools, how you went about in relation to gathering the material and what brought possession to build that boat.
I remember when I was in secondary school, my handwriting was so bad, they had me do all my work on a laptop. Now, this is fantastic because you could just, when you looked like you were doing work, you were actually browsing online or whatever. And I remember reading about curraghs and I was like, it was just something I constantly went back to and I said I was going to do it. So that's where I kind of the notion came from. And then obviously when lockdown came, loads of time, so I just did it. Like curraghs, they were built by people on the, you know, rural islands with very little materials to begin with. So I reckon if they could do it with next to no materials, no power tools, why wouldn't I be able to do it in the back garden with access to electricity and, you know, lumber yards and all that sort of stuff around me? So I sourced it from a local sawmill, all the materials. Just the canvas then that I stretched over it was just an old bed sheet, and covered that in bitumen, and away I went.
So in terms of getting, the tools, but also the materials you needed, how did you manage to source them?
Well, it's very simple. It's just a bit of ash. It's basically a big old basket made out of like strips of ash, strips of oak, which I heated up in like steam, and then you bent them to the shape of the hull. And yeah, it was fairly straightforward. It all kind of fell together.
Owen, did it give you an appreciation for what used to be done?
Absolutely. Like these things took time. Everything nowadays is, you know, you just buy a quick fiberglass boat and it's there forever. The Corocs, you know, there's a lot of skill and time went into them. A lot of hard work spent behind rowing them.
Can you give us an example of that, though? Just using the Corroc for an example, you know, how we used to do things before. Do you look at it now and say, we were doing that absolutely right before?
Yeah,
and
okay.
Sometimes we cloud it with making it too simple.
Pure. Absolutely, yeah. I think I like the fact that a Corroc, you know, if left in a ditch for 10 years, will just disintegrate down to nothing. Everything nowadays seems kind of very permanent. If you buy a fiberglass boat, you can leave it in your garden and it'll be there for 20, 30 years, just kind of rotting away and looking ugly. So I can appreciate that way as well. But also, I suppose, the skill and the craftsmanship that would have had to existed locally for that Corroc to exist. Do you know what I mean? Like on the islands, there would have been a boat builder and a furniture maker. Like the whole community existed because of these craftspeople, and we don't have that anymore. Everything is just kind of imported.
Yeah. What was the biggest challenge then when building the Corroc?
I suppose finding, like, Ireland was very barren. We spent a few centuries cutting down all the trees in this country. So there was no, like, big massive trees. Everything that we built was almost made out of sticks. Like, if you actually take the skin off the Corroc, if you will, it looks like a skeleton. It's just made out of very thin sticks. But it's surprisingly strong. And the same can be seen in our furniture. Like the famous Irish Sugan chair. That's a chair where the seat is actually woven out of straw because we wouldn't have any large trees to make the wider boards for the seat. So there's a lot of ingenuity. So they did have challenges, but I think the way they surpassed them challenges is kind of brilliant as well.
And your challenges, what were the big challenges for you then when you were building it? Where did you come across?
My parents were a bit opposed to the idea of a boat being built in their back garden. But moving it then was, it's a heavy enough old boat for one person to carry. So I had a few friends who were all willing to lend a shoulder.
Did you have the champagne launch?
We didn't know. We just brought it to the beach one Sunday and just took it out and realised the waves were a bit harsh, so went on home.
Owen, you've the perfect mix of traditional skill sets to produce what you do, but also you've brought it really modern by doing it on things, a platform like TikTok. Can you tell us about the process of putting it up on TikTok?
Okay, so at the start, I was just kind of turning a camera on myself while I was like planing a piece of wood. But over time, as I kind of got a feel for TikTok, like I was fairly new to the app at the time, I started kind of making videos where I was, I suppose, kind of storytelling the process of restoring an old tool. Like, for example, I could be sharpening a chisel or something, but I kind of break down the different parts. I go, this is an old chisel I have. It's rusty and blunt. And then the next step, I'm sharpening it, taking the rust off or whatever. So it kind of, yeah, it got broken into a process. And I think people like that kind of, they like seeing something started and finished.
Yeah. You've done a bit of work with Chadwicks before. You went up against Pete the Builder, is that right? Can you tell us about it?
So we were asked by Chadwicks in celebration of supplying the like builder's market for 100 years to do a video where Pete, we were both challenged with building a bird box. Pete was using all his fancy, you know, Festool power tools or whatever. And I was there using like the tools they would have had 100 years ago. So we had the same product. Pete got there a bit faster, but... yeah, that
we
was
had
a bit
Pete
of fun.
In a few weeks ago. He said he was much better than you, just so you know.
And you're studying. Well, you were studying in UCC, is that right? Or what are you at now?
So I was studying commerce. I was halfway through third year of commerce in UCC, and I figured I'd strike while the iron was hot on this whole TikTok thing. So I parked that for a year, and I've just basically been doing kind of demonstration shows, putting more time into creating content. But I'll probably go back to college next year. We'll see. Yeah. I'm up in the air at the minute.
It's a massive audience you have, 2.7 million. Do you know where they are? Where they're based?
Half of my audience is American. So like, 1.3 million Americans or something like that, which is
phenomenal.
Interesting. They wear their arms on their sleeves, those Americans.
Yeah.
Like I get an email almost every day being like, hey man, love the videos. If you're ever in Arkansas, you know,
give it
a bell, yeah.
Oh, wow. Just chat to us about using the platform, TikTok for you. I suppose there is so many different ones, but how do you think this, what you do is perfect on TikTok?
Well, I think TikTok, there's a lot of crap on it, you know what I mean? Mm. You can, anyone who uses it regularly, you know, you're doom scrolling past just a lot of fairly poor quality content. So I think if you do anything that's kind of somewhat original, you'll gain traction. And it's very unlike other platforms in the way that anything can take off. Like with Instagram or anything like that, if you want a video to or a post to do well, you kind of want a big following. With TikTok, it's you could have no followers and a video could get millions of views. It's unique like that.
But TikTok it's changing the music industry in terms of how they're producing it. But you're coming to it with something really traditional. It would be quite unlike the demographic for TikTok, if you know what I'm trying to say, yeah. In terms of it's a younger audience. But what you're doing is traditional.
I suppose. I think ideally my content is more suited for like a longer form, maybe like 10, 15 minute videos, because I would like to go into more detail about what I'm doing. But by the nature of TikTok's platform, it's very kind of bam, bam, bam. You're working with a very short attention span. If you've watched any of my videos, you'll notice that none of the clips in each video are more than like 4 seconds long. It's always next thing, next thing, next thing, next thing, for better or for worse.
But Owen, how do you manage to get the message across in that short space of time? I think everyone's trying to adapt and look at the world in different ways, and we'll have lots of tradespeople listening that would like to use social media platforms. What advice would you have for them about...
I think that's kind of the skill to it. You have to kind of get a bit of a hook at the start of the videos, like... I could start a video with, today I'm going to be doing blah, blah, blah. Say it really quickly. You want the viewer to know what they're doing, what they're investing the next 30 seconds of their life into. Whereas, you know, with another platform, you could kind of sit down, like play it slow. What's up, guys? Big, long intro.
Yes.
Kind of like what you did at the start here. Because the viewer has already invested, or the listener in this case, has invested to an hour of listening.
And the viewer on video as well, just so you know. We're big noise.
Is it a risk, though? We see what happens with certain platforms to not nearly be spread across different ones. Would you look at them and kind of think, I have a great presence on TikTok, but maybe I need to work on my YouTube channels or different channels?
I found with TikTok, it's very hard to kind of convert viewers or followers to any other platforms. You know what I mean? I feel like if you had a following on Instagram, YouTube, it's a lot easier to get those viewers to do call to actions, you know, buy merch, that sort of thing. With TikTok, it's difficult. The only thing I've done like that is download my TikToks, compress them down to 1 minute and then re-upload them onto YouTube. And that's for monetary reasons more than anything else.
Yeah. Owen, we'll have an awful lot of people listening that every day they apply their craft, their trade, produce incredible things, but would never think of documenting it on any form of video, photograph, form of social media. What advice would you give to them starting out?
I would think just take a few videos of the process, like the start, middle and end, kind of tell a bit of a story, slice them all together and just throw them up on TikTok. I mean, it costs you nothing and you just never know who's going to see it. Or chances are, like if you post anything on TikTok, it's going to get a couple of hundred views no matter what. So that's if one in every 500 people sees a video, oh, I want to buy that mug you've just made or bowl you've just turned. You know, that they're all potential customers out there, especially for craftspeople in Ireland. I found that a lot of Americans seem to want to buy handmade Irish craft goods and stuff like that. So if you're in that industry, definitely a free way to market.
Do you want to buy any retired rugby players?
They're crocked. Stay away from them.
Yeah, look, I'm a commercial head. So from my perspective, if I'm going to start doing that, I want to make a few bob. You know, am I going to make money out of TikTok, or is there other platforms where I should apply my trade to make a few pence?
I think in Ireland, a lot of it's kind of word of mouth. Who you know, oh, I know a fella that does that, blah, blah, whatever. Whatever way the TikTok algorithm works, it pushes your videos out locally as well. For some reason, my videos will be seen in America, and also all the lads at the local pub seem to watch them. So I think if it's well known that you do this, obviously you're not going to bring it up, oh, I do this specific type of work. But if you just share a video of it, one of the lads might have seen it and go, oh, okay, yeah, I've seen him that. I know a fella that does that. So just like, it's kind of a modern word of mouth.
And is there money to be made with TikTok? Is there like other platforms?
If you're in America or England, you're paid cents for a couple thousand views. But I have 300 million views now and not a cent to show for it. But you can go live on TikTok. And then people can send you gifts. So I think, I don't like when people do that because TikTok takes 70% of any money that's being sent your way. So I think I've made about $400 or $500 off that in the space of a year. So no, there's not a living to be made on it just yet.
Does that frustrate you any bit?
I suppose it does, but because they're putting ads that they are making money.
Exactly. And you're putting the brilliant content.
Yeah. So I suppose it's annoying, but I suppose I'm benefiting in non-monetary ways. And I've started downloading my TikToks and re-uploading to YouTube. Now, YouTube is interesting because they've started YouTube Shorts, which is kind of a short-form YouTube platform that competes with TikTok. But they limit their content size to 1 minute. So my TikToks are normally about 2, 3, 4 minutes. I have to compress this already really fast-paced video down to 1 minute and throw it up to YouTube. And then I think I have one video that's gotten, I think, maybe 5 million views. And for that, I've made like $300. So it's not exactly great money for the view, like cent per view. Yeah.
Pat, start note. What's the best thing he can use? His phone? Is there apps that you use to help you edit what you're doing?
I did it a very kind of cowboy way. I had a broken iPhone X, you know, the battery really short and the screen was cracked. And for a whole year, I think I recorded 250 million views worth of video on this phone. So I just threw up the front-facing camera on the Snapchat app, recorded myself doing whatever, saving it to my camera roll, pulling up the TikTok app with its very primitive editing software, just splicing it all together. And away you go. Like, TikTok doesn't care about quality, as in like high video frame rate or resolution or whatever. It's just kind of cut like the story.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell us you rub the phone out of an old Irish phone box and start filming on that. Fair play.
Yeah. What was the video that you felt launched you?
Okay, so there was one morning I set out to an old car boot sale and I was looking for hand tools to restore and I was going to document the process just because people were asking, where do I get my tools? And I couldn't find any chisels or saws or anything. And I was about to go home empty-handed and I picked up an old, you know, those cutthroat razors, a rusty old thing from the bottom of a box, and your man wanted €2 for it, so it was like grand. I didn't want to leave empty-handed. I took it home anyway. I remember I was supposed to be studying for a big exam, but I just sacked that off and I just spent the rest of the day sharpening and cleaning this razor. And then I took it to my face and I shaved myself. And that video, I think, got something like 5 million views over the course of 2 days. And that really kind of blew me up by a couple. I think there was a few days over summer last year where I gained like 60,000 followers for 2 days in a row. So I think that might have been after that.
Wow. I get a sense you're getting very jealous here.
No, not at all. But like, because there's also an emphasis to keep the content coming. Do you find that quite draining or tiring that you have your audience, but they're constantly looking for more of your information, more of your...
I think you're nearly wrestling with the algorithm on TikTok than with the people. I think the people don't mind if you don't post for 2 weeks. I don't think they're checking in.
Yeah.
But I feel like what I've found, if I take 2 weeks off posting, then when I do go to upload, where I normally might get 250,000, 1 million views, TikTok's only going to push my video out so it gets maybe 100, 200,000. And that could be a bit annoying at the start, but you don't want to be at the mercy of the algorithm. I think just do what you're capable of doing. Sometimes if you just get a bit like bit down the dumps and you're not ready to, you don't have the energy to create content, just don't. That's kind of what I've been doing.
And tell us about community engagement in terms of like in the wider aspect of where you're walking around now. You would have probably people would know you from different things. So it's probably a younger audience that know you from being
on
TikTok.
Not entirely, actually. I get approached by a lot of like men in their 50s. And the people that do come up to me that are my own age, one of the first things a lot of them say to me is, you were the reason my dad downloaded TikTok, which
I think
is funny.
Yeah. Wow.
Because, I guess the older generation are into their woodworking or have, maybe they're more familiar with some of the older tools I was using because they saw their grandparents or parents using it. Yeah. I'm not sure why. But no, I get, I think everything from lads as young as 12 or 13 up until lads in their 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And how has your life changed then since you've become that TikTok sensation, or should I say TikTok superstar?
I'd like to think not a lot. I still do the same things, friends with the same people. I guess I took a year off college. I wouldn't have done that if it wasn't for the TikTok. I suppose it's been an interesting way to meet new people. Like, I've got invited to a lot of like heritage days. You meet a lot of other like blacksmiths and woodworkers and stuff like that. But also just individuals like steam engine enthusiasts or people who own sawmills. They reach out and they're like, oh, come visit my workshop. So it's been beneficial that way.
Can you chat to us about the craft industry within Ireland?
Okay, so I suppose if you talk to anyone, they'll tell you their grandfather or grandmother was a weaver or a basket maker or a coppersmith or any massive array of craftspeople that would have that we would have needed to have a functioning society a few generations ago. You know, obviously that's all being lost because, you know, we're importing all our machinery, all our goods, all our clothes, all our utensils. We don't really need people to make things anymore. So it's pretty much died out in the kind of practical sense. But there has been like a resurgence in kind of artisan crafts. So people that make baskets that are a bit more decorative instead of functional and, you know, very high-end handcrafted Irish chairs, you know, that kind of way. So I think there is a resurgence, but I can only see it lasting so long as we're in a, you know.
And is there a community or a club? Is there like a place people can go to see it all?
I think
all
craft fairs, it's all word of mouth. A lot of these crafts people tend to be very kind of isolated. They like to work out in the middle of nowhere. They don't like, you know, putting themselves out there. So the best way to see them is generally craft fairs and then, you know, commissioning whatever work you want by talking to them.
How important is it that we champion Irish craft? You know, we're known for around the world how good we produce and make things.
I think it's use or lose. I think we should definitely be encouraging young people to try take up, you know, that maybe their ancestral crafts just to keep them alive. You know, at the end of the day, no one's going to die if we lose our crafts. But I think it's important just to keep our heritage going, keep the traditions alive.
And you don't have to be from that background. You're the perfect
example. Oh, exactly,
of that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're thinking something there, basket weaving, give it a go.
Yeah, sure. My friend Tom started by robbing willow rods from the side of the road. The council would come along with their cutter or whatever, trim the hedges. He'd come back in a few months, cut himself some free willow rods and make baskets. You know, and sure, all he was using was his hands.
Wow. Oh, and that's fascinating because you were doing commerce, but this has put you down a total different path. Has it led to opportunities with brands and different paid partnerships?
Well, I've been very fussy with doing paid partnerships. I think I've turned down something like €40,000 worth of sponsorships in the last year just because I don't want to use the position to peddle products or just stuff I don't believe in. Do you know what I mean? I think we look back in a few generations and go, wow, it was really weird how we used, you know, beauty influencers or whatever to prey on young teenagers' insecurity to market them high margin, expensive products. So I don't want to be in that cohort down the line.
Wow.
So I think you have to be a bit fussy.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also your lifestyle. You know what I mean? It is.
I guess. But I mean, if you can't stick to your principles and make a living, just, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a brilliant way to view it and think about it all.
So, Colin, what are you working on at the moment and what sort of projects are you doing?
I'm working with a lad near where I live, a fella called Mark Donnelly. He owns a sawmill and a workshop, and I do a good variety of work with him. He does like, he's big into his traditional stuff as well. So we do like timber framing, which would have been, you know, an old fashioned way of building structures. And yeah, he's an interesting guy. I'm doing a lot of kind of odd jobs with him. I'm making tables for Blarney Castle down in Cork at the minute with him. So different stuff.
And what would you like to do?
I really don't know. I think at the minute I'm trying to dip my fingers as many pies as possible and see which tastes the best, because there's just so much you can do with woodworking. I'm doing carving lessons at the minute. I'd like to build another boat, but I've really gotten into the timber framing. I think there's probably a future for that in the construction industry in Ireland, a return to traditional, more sustainable building methods. But I'll see. I'm really kind of up in the air at the minute. I don't know where I'm going to land.
Do you find there's people pushing for that as well? They want the traditional build, the way it was done before?
I would say the opposite. I think once it can be done cheaper and faster, that's the two main things people want to go for. I think there's a lot less appreciation for the craftsmanship and the aesthetics. Like, even if you look at walking through Dublin City, even you can see like the buildings from 200 years ago. I mean, they're fantastic. Every single red brick would have been almost handmade, so to speak, and every single cut stone, hours spent behind a mallet and chisel doing all that perfect surfacing. Whereas nowadays, you'll just pour concrete or have a big, massive box of glass. And I think I'd like to see a return to more traditional building styles and methods, but no, I don't think that's the way we're going at the minute.
And who do you follow on TikTok, Tim, or what's your view, if you have any?
I don't know, to be honest. I try and watch TikTok less. I'm chronically addicted to it. Like, you know, I think... And I use the excuse, oh, I'm on it, so I'm researching. But I'm not, no, it's kind of mindlessly doomscroll. There's a lot of interesting creators in Ireland, though. Alice Kelly, she's a girl who we were talking about earlier. She's converted a horse box into a cafe. She's interesting. I have a good friend in Mayo, Thomas Delaney. He makes baskets. So there's a lot of like stuff out there kind of on the niche. Obviously, there's the bigger influence as well who I check in on, but I kind of try and look for the more niche.
Tell us, Owen, as parents, myself, it's one of the ones you worry about. Chat to us about maybe the negative side of it from your experience. Have you come across a negativity on social medias?
I think it's probably very bad for a young person's attention span, but I think that's just universal anyway. Try and encourage them to read books, I guess. But no, I think generally that's the way people are consuming content now. But I would say the worst thing would be this: the way people are influenced. I think influencers can be used in a negative light. They kind of, yeah, they encourage what young people buy and what they wear and how they should look. Mm. And I think that can be unhealthy. It doesn't encourage individualism. So I suppose, I think just, I wouldn't be too worried as a parent. I think once you just keep an eye, make sure they're not spending too much time.
But you do say in time, maybe we will look back at certain things that we left go. Like you made the example about kind of makeup and different things like that. It does feel a bit at the moment that like social media hasn't found its feet correctly yet.
I think so. No, I think the biggest problem with me is just how it is being used to push consumption. How we're constantly being bombarded with ads and pushed to buy things. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's definitely more on the beauty sector. I think that's, I have a problem with that, the way it's just, here's how you should look, here's how you can buy it. And you know, that's also promoting fast fashion. You've got a load of low quality, cheap clothes that are being sold at high products, made by cheap labor, you know, that are being worn once or twice and then left to just disintegrate into microplastics.
So where do you see from your perspectives, your videos are obviously getting mass coverage. Is there anyone coming back to you saying, actually, since you started this, I'm starting to use old tools, I'm starting.
Yeah, that's my favourite, the result of it. Especially when young lads message you, oh, have you any old hand plane I can buy off you? Or, oh, look, I dug out my grandfather's toolbox and I got these tools working and here's what I made. I love that because, I mean, if someone watching my video has been motivated or inspired to go off and do something like that, that's going to change the entire course of their lives for the better.
And will that take you to some direction in relation to you teaching? Do you see yourself being I know you're doing on the TikTok, but is there a bigger role for you in relation to teaching skills that we mentioned in earlier podcasts? A lot of the teams around the podcast are around apprenticeships and young people coming into the construction sector. You kind of have that, you are an influencer on TikTok with a young person's place.
I'd be happy to encourage young people to get into the trade. I think we have a stigma in Ireland against it. But in regards to me teaching, I could see myself down the line becoming a woodwork teacher. But in the short term, I've been meaning to start workshops, you know, where you invite people over for a few days and you teach them about tools and they all come together and they all make their own chair, something like that. But at the same time, I've only been woodworking for 2 years. You know, I wouldn't trust me if I just showed up and there's a young lad in a paddy cap who you're paying good money to show you the ropes.
It was okay, you're from Cork. Cork people
And I'm interested in what you said about the stigma of trades. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Basically, how secondary schools in Ireland are graded is how many of the Leaving Cert students go on to go to college. So the more students go to college, the higher the secondary school is ranked. Therefore, the secondary schools are encouraged to try upgrades and up, third level uptake. So that way, kind of practical skills are kind of, they're not encouraged as much as they should be. Like, we have a huge workforce deficit in Ireland of tradespeople. I think if people visited, or tradespeople visited secondary schools and showed them, kind of showed off that, like when we were in secondary school, we had lecturers visit the school and tell us, oh, look how great this college course is. If you had that, just like the likes of Peter Billy we were talking earlier, if he was some sort of ambassador for FOSS or something, who could go visiting schools and go, oh, look, this is, look how much different things you can do. Look what great money you can make.
I think you have a point there, but I think it was even Peter Biller, probably he's a man on TikTok. I think you have a platform that can help the sector. That's where that platform is for you. They are, well, let's be honest, they're looking at TikTok. You're talking about it, it's horrific, I'd say. They're non-stop looking at it. So I can see the influence that you guys could have on that. So there's probably something in that.
I think we've kind of become a bit more advertiser-proof as well when we're scrolling. Like, do you know what I mean? If I'm scrolling through TikTok and there's a fella who I regularly watch and I think his videos are great, and I catch on at the start that this video is going to be an ad, like this is a sponsored video, I will scroll on. So I think it's very more difficult to influence. You have to be a lot more subtle about the way you do it, you know?
Do you feel a responsibility with the influence inside of it?
I suppose, yeah, you do have to be a bit responsible in what you promote and what you do. Yeah, I think TikTok is pretty good for taking down anything that that can be seen as dangerous. Like, I've had videos where I've just sharpened a chisel and used it to shave my arm taken down because they thought it could be like promoting self-harm or something like that. So I think TikTok has taken a big enough responsibility that way. It can be difficult sometimes when you get taken down for something as stupid as that. Yeah. But I think they're doing a good job with that responsibility.
And what would you say to someone listening or watching that, like you said, you never picked up a tool before 2 years ago and now it's a massive passion for you?
I think you just kind of got to follow your, like if you think you might like something, give it a go. And if you don't, you know, don't be shy to splash out and buy some fancy tools or fancy equipment that allow you to try something new, because you can always just sell that on if it doesn't work out. And you might love it and you might turn out that you're obsessed with this. And, you know, if you're obsessed with something, you're just going to keep it coming. You're going to constantly want to learn more, do more, and you just don't know where it's going to take you.
Owen, you're young. Where do you see yourself, say, 5 years' time? What's the goal? Or are you just going with it?
I think I'm just going to go with it. There's really no way to know which way this will go. I'd love to maybe land a TV show where I kind of go into more detail about what I'm doing at the minute, but it could just fizz out into nothing. It might just be something I do on weekends and end up in some corporation.
TV shows, co-hosts. Yeah,
absolutely.
We go ahead with that. No problem there.
Owen, you'd be brilliant on something like that, though.
Yeah, I'm working with an agency at the minute, so hopefully they'll be able to work something out for us.
And at home then, you're saying that you've got accountants at home. Nobody was in the trade at all, even the grandparents before that?
My grandfather was a mechanic, but no, he kind of retired when the diagnostics things came in, so it's a long time ago. No, I'd say my parents thought I was mad when I was driving home with a car boot full of like rusty old tools that I was just piling in the corner of a garage, but I think they're starting to see the light now.
Yeah.
Or they did once the videos kind of took off. I'm lucky it did, actually. I mightn't have a garage to work in if they didn't see the...
Oh, could I ask for two bits of advice for younger people? One, looking to get into trades, and the other, looking to get into social media.
Okay, well, I don't know if I have much of a ground to stand on in regards encouraging people to get into trades, because I never did one. But I think if you find school isn't for you, it's probably worth your while to reach out to local tradespeople that you might know and see will they take you on for work maybe when you're in transition year. You never know what you might take a liking to. You might hate it, at least then you'll know.
Yeah.
And regarding getting into social media, that's an interesting one, because I was always against the idea. I didn't really like the idea of Instagram. I thought it was very superficial. I liked YouTube. I used to post YouTube videos when I was about 15 or 16, but I was young. The videos weren't great. They were fairly embarrassing looking back. And that made life difficult when you know, other people in school found out about them. You can imagine how popular I was. If you have an interest, if you have something to share, get good enough that you're comfortable sharing it and just go for it. You don't have to show your face. Just show something off. It's definitely worth your while. You don't know who you might meet, who might reach out to you. Social media is mad, especially TikTok. Like I said, you can post one video, having no followers, it'll go viral. It'll open a few doors for you, no matter what.
But you also spoke of the bad side of it as well, and just the onus on everyone within it to be responsible and kind and caring and look out for each other, because we all put stuff up in naivety or being a bit younger. Yeah, but it can last a bit longer than we all hope.
And that's very difficult. I think, the likes of... Yeah, I don't like the... Snapchat is very, very popular amongst like teenagers, and it's just, you're constantly showcasing your life, and you're constantly being judged, and you're constantly, you know, it's like you're constantly on display. And I think that's difficult for young people. I'd say the generations before that didn't have to worry about that. Yeah, for better or for worse, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's so interesting though, and we are so appreciative of you taking the time to chat to us. We wish you unbelievable success, whatever road you go down to. Be it TV or just back into commerce or whatever you do, you're a bright, incredible young man, and we wish you all the very best. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. So Donegal, as you know, every week we have a spotlight on a supplier from Chadwicks, and this week we're very lucky to have a special guest, Mr. Dave McKeown from Kilsarran. So Dave, you're very welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Dave, look, do you want to tell us a little bit about Kilsarran? I mean, we see your trucks all over the country, effectively. Would you mind telling us, for the people that are listening that don't know Kilsarran, a little bit about yourselves?
Yeah, sure. I suppose I always start when I'm asked that question by saying we're a family business. We're 59 years, I think, now in business this year. So started in the village of Kilsarran in County Louth. Grandfather started up the business. his sons took it over, and now myself and my two brothers are in the business and running it. So, yeah, so started in Kilcern, as I said, concrete business, blocks, quarrying business. And then we kind of progressed and grew the business then through kind of organic growth and through acquisitions right up into the kind of the 90s. And then we started to expand the business away from concrete blocks and concrete products into renders and paving and mortars and screeds and external wall insulation and asphalt products. So we have a full suite now. So essentially we have six businesses that all sit under the Kilcern umbrella.
How many counties are you operating out of in Ireland?
All of them. We have different business units. Obviously, can travel different geographies because of, you know, obviously concrete is bound by regulations, so you're only allowed 2 hours of working time within concrete. But some of our dry products and our paving products, they will go nationwide. And we have a team in Northern Ireland as well, and then we have a team in the UK. So we're not limited by any geographical boundaries in Ireland. But if you want to talk about production facilities, we're probably predominantly in Leinster, and then with the acquisition of CMEX's locations in September 2014, that got us into Tipperary, Cork, and into the Munster region. Concrete and aggregates, Munster and Leinster, paving, our bag products and our renders would be nationwide, and then obviously Northern Ireland and over to the UK as well.
So fair to say an important employer in all these places. What sort of workforce are you at the moment?
We're just under 1,000 at the moment. We also acquired Orem Precast last year in Galway. We set up our own precast business about 3 years ago. And then very quickly realised that there was an opportunity for a company called Orem Precast, which we were doing business with, and us to kind of come together and merge. And that's what we did. We bought the company and merged them, and that team are running it. And they pushed us from about 750 up close to 1,000. So that's where we sit at the moment. And still looking to grow as well.
Very good.
Dave, 59 years in the business, as you were saying, 1,000 people employed in the workforce. Just the community side of it for you. You might chat to us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, it's huge, you know what I mean, for us, because we're 30 production locations around the country as well, Dunica. So it's, you know, it's where we are as well as we're predominantly based in rural settings, you know what I mean? So we would have a huge range of initiatives going all the way up to kind of our national charities that we partner with on an annual basis, right down to the local GAA clubs, you know, that we would help and do sponsorship with and do initiatives with throughout the year, depending on where we are. So from the length and breadth, everything from the Dundalk Rugby Club down to GAA Club and Ovens that we're sponsoring at the moment, and everything in between.
Yeah, amazing. And in terms of the whole world, sustainability, it's the main topic of conversation. You might chat us through your
huge, particularly in some of our business units when we're dealing with foreign direct investment, particularly American multinationals coming in. You got a lot of the sovereign wealth funds that are coming in that are demanding, you know, green initiatives in construction materials. So we set about a year and a half ago to try and actually capture an awful lot of the initiatives that we were doing, and then to really formalise and then to set benchmarks on how we wanted the business to be run from a governance, from a sustainability, and then how do we actually put down targets and drive that forward. And one of the first things we found was that, you know, over the last 20, 30 years, we've actually been really good at sustainability, but we've been really bad at telling people about it. And we were actually really bad at telling ourselves about it. So we would have an initiative, say, for instance, in Kildare, where we'd be reclaiming some gravel and sand facilities that would be fully extracted back into agricultural use. But we've also, you know, in that process, we ended up like planting thousands of trees. And then we also ended up having, I think, about 4 or 5 acres of wildflower meadows just happened to be growing, you know, right up to, we've been using GGBS in our concrete for the last, you know, 20 years. We were the first company to actually introduce that fully into all of our mixes, you know, right up into some of the management systems that were running within the organisation. So we also then took a company called Clearstream, who are independent consultants in relation to sustainability. And they came on stream with us, and we spent all of 2022 really taking a very good hard look at ourselves, and we've built our sustainability charter and we're about to launch it, and it's basically built off four pillars, which is people, performance, planet and solutions, and that's going to enable us to actually have sustainable benchmarks there for the business or the different business units depending on how they're performing, set targets and then measure those to actually try and achieve them. So
it can be quite an Irish problem that we're doing something really well, but we don't.
We're the best in the world at not telling. Like, we were actually really concerned because, concerned is probably the wrong word. We were probably apprehensive of, you know, a concrete company and sustainability. And, you know, those two terms don't necessarily sit very well together. And, you know, we just decided we were going to have to kind of bite the bullet and do it, and that was it. But when we actually got in and looked at some of the stuff that we were doing and some of the stuff that we had been doing, some really great initiatives in there. And again, we just don't tell. We never told ourselves, never mind tell our customer base. So that's a cultural change, I think, that we as an organisation that we need to do, and particularly as a family as well. You know, I think we have, you know, multiple different sites where we have multiple generations working for our company, and sustainability means different things to different people all the way up and down through that. So
that must make you proud.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's always we always take a lot of pride in how the trucks look and the livery and all of our locations, and you know, we make sure that the branding is very very important to us, and that's because it's kind of a part of us, you know what I mean? So, no, it does make me very proud. And it's great as well to see some of the old pictures and some of the pictures of my grandfather and my uncles, you know, back in the 70s, late 60s and 70s and 80s, and to kind of look at where the business is now. And then to kind of say, well, how am I going to make sure this business is there again for the next generation?
No pressure.
First generation, second generation.
Yeah.
And come here, how's the rugby coaching going?
Rugby coach is going well, yeah. I'm down in Lansdowne and it's going well. I'm very fortunate. I have Alan Redden.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I've Alan Redden down there with me. And I have a great team of coaches, all volunteers, everyone there on a Sunday morning. Under sixes, under sevens were a bit hard to control, but at under 12s, they're finally listening to me. Well, they listen to Reds, or they don't listen to me at all.
Don't offer your services.
No, I'll be honest, I can't help but at that level, because that's I'm coaching up in Conn at the under eights, and I think I judge a training session how successful it was by how many pairs of laces I tie in the morning.
Oh, I'm still at it. I'm still at it.
It's a nightmare.
Come here,
last year you won an award in the hardware show.
We did, for Uno. So Uno is a one-coat render system that we've developed in Kildare. We really have been kind of building our K-Pro business, which is our renders and our screeds. And one of the things that we kind of looked at was speed of construction, the hot topic at the moment. You know, how do we get houses up as quickly as possible? And then also, when you talk about sustainability, is the durability of the product, and you know, how environmentally friendly is the product, and how can we help that? And one of the things that we did was, if you take a traditional block and render build, it's a two coat system. So you build your blocks, the electric mortar set, you come back, you put on a scratch coat. That's about, you know, 12, 15 mil. You let that set for a couple of days. You come back, you put on your finish coat. You let that set for a couple of days. You come on, you paint it. So you've got about probably 22 mil of an entire a system on the outside of a block. And then you have paint as well. So we've developed a one coat system that is pre-coloured. So you can pick the colour. It comes in a range of colours. And for larger projects, we can actually get into colour matching as well. And it's a 15 mil. So it's a one-time application, so it's a lot quicker. So it's 15 mil rather than it's 22 mil. So you have less material going on the wall. And from an environment perspective, that means less packaging, less transport. And then also for us, it's an Irish product. So we did an awful lot of work to make sure that it met all the requirements, not only that, but it's actually achieving better. It's achieving much better results when it comes to the wind-driven rain and its ability to deal with that. So, you know, as we kind of say, it was engineered, it was concept in Ireland, it was engineered in Ireland, it was manufactured in Ireland, and it's sold in Ireland. So it's great. And that's all from our R&D team down in Kildare, which are always kind of bringing out some amazing stuff. So we were delighted with that award last year. And on the back of that, the product has done really well.
You might have known this, but Dunica was a Le Plaster's labour at one stage for his brothers. His arms wouldn't have been as big today if they had had Uno. So you're probably delighted you didn't have Uno back then.
Exactly. I'm glad I didn't have to pick out the colours. Absolute nightmare of a job.
Yeah, no. Well, look, this is all pre-coloured. So it's kind of, it's very, very easy. So, yeah, I'd say your plastering skills, my plastering skills, Dunica, are probably matched. That's why I leave it to the experts.
Brilliant, Dave. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a million. Appreciate it.
The Under Construction podcast is produced by the podcast studios for Chadwicks, Ireland's leading building merchant company, where you can choose from the best products and expert advice to get the job done. Drop into any of your local Chadwicks stores nationwide or visit us online at chadwicks.ie.